I'm afraid to say anything. Oh, Becky is so sweet. I never get nervous till I hear other people talk about me, and then I was just like, who is that person? That's not, it's not really all that that she said there. I feel like I'm going to be jumping on you girls if you're right there. But I just can't tell you how excited I am to be here. Ever since Dave and Becky came to Kansas, I have been waiting to come out. And finally, I was starting to think, I'm just going to have to invite myself because they're not asking me to come out here. Because I couldn't wait to meet you. I have been praying for you. We have been praying for you, our family. And we love your church. And we just had to meet you, get to know your faces, because we've already been praying for you. We already have you in our hearts. And so thank you for letting me come. And February is the perfect month for me to come out here. I'm so excited that it's wintry and cold. And it's just really is neat, because I do miss cold weather. And though in Burbank, today is supposed to snow there, of all things. And my youngest son said, Mom, it's so weird. You're going to be, gone the day it snows in Burbank. I don't know if it probably won't happen, but still. And of course, you never want to be anywhere near snow or snowy roads if it does snow in Southern California, because nobody knows how to drive on the roads. It is the most terrifying thing ever. It happened when I was teaching school there, when my husband was in seminary, and we had a snow day. It snowed literally this much. They canceled school, sent all the kids home. And my husband had dropped me off at school. He had to come and pick me up and drive me home. It was the most harrowing 45 minutes I had ever spent just trying to get across town, because no one knows how to drive in snow there. So anyway, it's funny. I want to just tell you a little bit about myself. Becky mentioned that we have three kids. Jack and I have been married 26, going on 27 years. And we met while we were in college. We got married while we were in college. We were poor in college together. We worked two part-time jobs and finished up college together. And after we'd been married 3 years, then we moved to Southern California, where he went to the Master's Seminary to go to study to be a pastor. And we were in school for 3 years. Our daughter was born then. And then when he graduated, we knew we were going to be going to a church in Idaho. And the night he graduated, we drove all the way back to Idaho, because we didn't want to stay in Southern California anymore, any longer than we had to. And but we ministered in that church after he graduated for 9 more years there, and that's where our sons were born. And then just out of God's sovereignty, God's providence, we ended up 10 years ago being asked to move to Burbank, California, which we just laughed. We just thought, Southern California, are you kidding? We left, we're gone. But it became apparent that that's exactly where the Lord was calling us, and we absolutely love our ministry in Southern California, in Burbank. We love our church. The people there are wonderful. Of course, we met Becky there and many other people just as wonderful as she is, and Sandy. And so we love our ministry there. We love what God is doing. But it is a treat to be able to get out of the city and come be here with you. So thanks. And let's see. Our youngest son is a junior in high school. Our kids have gone to public school all their lives. And then our next son is 19. He graduated from high school last year. He's working full-time, saving up for college. And he just recently moved out, is living with a buddy, and is just thrilled. He's so excited. And he has a rice cooker and, all these things. And He told me the other day, Mom, I made Chinese chicken. So I asked him how he did it. And he opened up the can of chicken noodle soup, drained the broth out of the chicken noodle soup, and then added all these spices and stuff and made his Chinese chicken. And I thought, who would have thought to drain the juice out of chicken noodle soup? But he figured it out, and he said, it was so good. So I don't know. So he's adventuring into the cooking realm, and we're trying to encourage him to be frugal. So he bought himself a 50-pound bag of rice from Costco, and he's had rice, I think, 4 or 5 nights in a row, last week. And then our daughter is, who is the oldest, she is almost 21 and still lives at home. She's just finishing up with her AA degree at the local community college, and then she needs to transfer somewhere. So we have, you know, our kids, the two oldest work, and our youngest one's going to get a job this summer. So we're, you know, we don't see them very much. It seems like, you know, a lot of times it's just Jack and I and Mark, who's the youngest, because the other ones are busy working and everything. So we are transitioning into saying goodbye to the kids and, you know, some of those times when it's just like, nobody's home anymore, but we're also enjoying that because I've loved our kids at every age. I loved them when they're 9 months old. I've loved them when they're, you know, 10. I loved them this age. You know, it's just every stage has its most wonderful parts. But I do love coming to play with the kiddos, and so, you know, being able to play with Sandy and Becky's kids last night was really cool. So because I love the little ones. All right, well, let's get started here. We have, I want to talk about expectations. And, you know, I don't know what kind of expectations you have about what you're going to hear and what you're going to get out of our time together. But we all have expectations. You've had expectations about what you thought that even this morning was going to be like, what your hair was going to look like when, you know, you did your hair or whatever it is. You know, we have expectations about things that we look forward to for the future. Synonyms of the word expectations are to have an outlook, a belief, a hope, a promise, a foretaste, anticipation, apprehension, hopefulness, possibility. All of those things describe that expectations that we might have. And, you know, I think we all realize that expectations are normal, that we can't get away from having expectations. That's what we look forward to. That's part of what makes life kind of fun, is that anticipation. And I certainly had my expectations for coming here and just couldn't wait to come be with you. And we, you know, we know that when we anticipate something and then it actually is even better than we hoped for, you know, there's nothing more exciting than that, you know, when it's like, oh, it was better than I thought. And yet, there's nothing more depressing than when you anticipate something and it doesn't, you know, it's less than you hoped for, less than you expected, and you just kind of drag your knuckles on the ground or whatever it is. And so, you know, we're going to be talking about that aspect of expectations, because the good part is no big deal. You know, we're all just thrilled, you know, if our expectations are exceeded, and it's wonderful. But what do we do when we have expectations for something or a situation, for life, for ourselves, for other people, and those things are left there, they're not met? And what do we do with all that stuff that happens inside of us as a result of that? Because that's what we're going to need to, that's what we have to deal with. How can we do that in a way that gives God glory? And so when our expectations, when, you know, we struggle with that to one degree or another. And I think, you know, we've all been, you probably have been overwhelmed at times when, you know, you've realized, I'm just struggling with this. I don't know what to do. And how can I get over this? And so you come to a crossroads. What am I going to do? Am I just going to continue to stay the same, or am I going to deal with this? And so, you know, I this subject of unmet expectations was kind of an interesting one. I didn't choose it necessarily. It was one that was kind of thrust upon me. And I was going to speak for our church and the women's committee. You know, I said, well, what would you like me to teach on? And they gave me some choices of things. But one of them was overcoming unmet expectations. And so I thought, well, that's interesting. You know, I'd like to get over it myself. So that's why I started studying this. Not because I have figured it out. I'm not. In fact, I think I'm the queen of unmet expectations. From the time I was a little girl, I feel like I have struggled with that, you know, those expectation kinds of things where, you know, it would come upon me at, you know, birthday parties. It's like, oh, this is could be the best little birthday party, you know, and then the birthday party would never be quite, you know, and I'd be all sad, and, you know, or, you know, anything new, the start of school, oh, you know, all those kinds of things, anything I was just, I struggled with when my expectations, my hopes, my dreams, my excitements would just be dashed because it wasn't what I had in my head. And so, you know, my response usually was to be bummed out for, you know, I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but that was mine. And of course, the degree of the bummer that I experienced was to the extent of how excited I was or to, you know, how much there was a problem with it not being met. You know, and I find that it hasn't changed from the time I was a little girl even till now. You know, Jack and I will be out someplace and I'll have expectations about the route we're going to take going somewhere. Oh, I noticed you turned right here. You know, don't you think the other way is a good way? Because I thought of it, you know, kind of a thing. Don't you think it'd be faster to go this way? And then, you know, those are little expectations, but still, you know, you're driving in the car, somebody else has a different idea than the route that you thought, and it's kind of like, I have a good idea. You're not meeting up to my expectations. And then you have a choice. Are we going to be in a little snit about it? Or are we going to just, oh, that's no big deal. That's a, you know, pass that over. I have found that I have expectations about holidays and vacations. I don't know about you. You know, Norman Rockwell scene, rosy cheeks, everybody, you know, the perfect food, the fire going, everybody's happy. You know, and then usually it's not quite like that. You know, somebody's got a little bad attitude or something like that. Of course, it's not me. But, but you know, it's just those expectations that we have that this is what it's going to be like when we're all gathered together and we're all having fun and we're giving glory to the Lord. But it doesn't always work out that way. I am, and you know, one of the things that I've been surprised about as my kids have gotten older, which I completely did not expect, is that, here's what I expected. I expected my kids to have the same convictions I do about stuff, that, you know, they would think what I think, because I, of course, I've told them all these years exactly what I think about stuff. And so I expected them, when they're in their teenage years, to parrot everything I say, because, of course, I'm wise, so I know what they should think. And then when they come up with their own ideas about things, it's kind of like, are you kidding? You're that's what you're thinking? But that's not what Dad and I say. And I was really surprised that my kids had minds of their own. Amazing. So, I don't know, you probably never deal with that, but I have dealt with that. About 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, our daughter Leah, when she was 16, developed a headache that has never left. She has a headache 24/7. There's nothing that takes it away. She lives with constant pain, and still sometimes hard for me to talk about. But what I discovered through that time is that I expected my kids to be healthy. And I was really surprised at that. I knew that God would give trials to my kids, but I didn't expect that he would affect their bodies. I thought he would bring it through, you know, maybe a broken bone or something, but, you know, that heals. But I didn't expect it to be a long-term kind of thing because our kids had been healthy all up to that point. And so I just didn't expect that from the Lord. I expected him to do it to me, but I didn't expect him to do it to our kids. So that was something that was interesting for me as well. I find that I have expectations about my walk with the Lord. I certainly expect to be much more godly, bold, and wonderful than I am. And it's kind of disappointing to look and to see how much more work I still have to do. Because I know I'm going to sin. I just don't expect to sin in the way that I sin. You know, I expect to sin in a more godly way than the way I am. And it's just so discouraging to see, oh, I thought I was over that. And I'm not. And I find I have expectations for answered prayer. Of course, I always love it when God says yes to my prayers because, you know, that's what I I asked him for, and he agreed with me. But when he says no, or maybe, or wait, then I find that, you know, I have expectations about that, and I have to trust him. I often expect my poor dear sweet husband to be perfect. I mean, he is a pastor, after all. He should be perfect, and even at home. And I find that, you know, he's not sometimes, and I'm really surprised, because in my mind, he is. And then when he isn't, then I have expectations I have to deal with. And when I was a young believer, I thought I had God all figured out. Well, this is how God will act, and he will do this, and this will be my life, and this will do, and it didn't work out that way. God completely surprised me by not responding in the way I thought. Amazing. And yet when God didn't respond in those ways, I would get discouraged because it was different than I thought it was going to be. And so over the years, I have tried to deal with my unmet expectations for all of these things and more by, you know, trying to help myself get over it. Sometimes, you know, some of the ways that I've dealt with it is, you know, well, just deal with it. That's the way it is. And that, you know, works to a certain degree. Or, oh, just get over yourself. What is the big deal? Why are you thinking that it's such a big deal? To just telling myself the truth. You are such a dork. And, you know, that sometimes works. Sometimes I have to remind myself, is this an eternal issue? And that seems to help me a lot of times. But oftentimes the way that I get over it is just by reminding myself, God is sovereign over these events, and I can trust him, and he will help me. So when I say that I think I'm qualified to talk on this subject, it's not because I have my act together. It's because I have so much practice in trying to overcome our unmet expectations. And so what I'm going to do is just talk with you about what I've been working on in my own life. And maybe you'll come along with me and we can do this together. Because I don't think I'm all that unusual. I don't think I'm any different. I may be worse than some of you, but I don't think I'm all that unusual. I think most women, we struggle with some of these things. And the degree that we struggle with them depends on how much we have invested in those things. So let's just take a look at what is at the root of unmet expectations. Just let's try and understand that. What's at the root of it? What's causing these responses in us that we kind of realize, you know, I'm struggling with this. Well, I think it can all be traced back to discontentment. Oh, there's that word, discontented. I think discontentment's at the bottom of the struggles that we face when we have unmet expectations. You know, sin pops up, but discontentment's the root of our troubles over our unmet expectations. And discontentment, you know what it is, but it's that feeling of wanting something better or an improved situation, something different. Discontentment. Oh, I want something different. I think that's me when I, you know, if I look at my situation, look at when I have unmet expectations. You know, Jack and I are driving somewhere. He takes a different route than I think he should. What's at the root of it? Well, I'm discontented with the route he's taking. So I was like, hey. You know, I think I've got a better way. And, you know, when I'm struggling, it's because I usually want to fix the situation. I want to improve it. And so to be discontent means to be dissatisfied with our current situation in some way. It's that kind of, you know, discontentment. When I think about it, it makes me feel like, you know, if I were to take discontentment and put it on my face, you know, that part, that feeling that you have in your heart and you put it on your face, you know, you would kind of get a pucker, like when you eat a lemon and your eyebrows would kind of go up and be all twisty. I mean, discontentment is that it distorts us and it distorts our hearts. And if we were to wear it on our face, it would not be a pretty picture. And 1 Samuel 22:2 describes discontentment as being bitter of soul. Discontentment with our situation, whatever it may be, can manifest itself by longing or yearning for something, by pining away after something, by being wishful or nostalgic. discontentment with our situation or circumstances says, this is what God gave me, but I don't like it. I deserve something better, or I want something different than what I received. And discontentment with our situation will cause us to argue and say, my way, my idea is better than God's, and I deserve better than what he's given me. That's what discontentment is saying. Discontentment with what is happening in our lives can respond with something like, I don't have what I want, and I want more, and I want that, and I want what they have. Now, most of the time, when we are feeling that way, we're not going to say it like that. I mean, that's pretty bold, and it's kind of like, oh, don't say that. That's not very good. You know, that's not very nice. But that's what's in our hearts. If we were to put that feeling into words from our hearts, that's what it is. I don't like it. This is not what I wanted. I didn't sign up for this. But what we find is that even if we don't speak those words that are in our hearts, they're still part of us. If we don't deal with it, we mull them over. It's in our minds. It's in our hearts. It's affecting how we live. It's going to come out. It's going to come out in some way. And usually that comes out in sinful ways, in areas that we're going to be looking at later. We can find many instances of discontentment in the scriptures. Because I was thinking, well, am I the only one? I wonder, is there anybody in the Bible that exhibited discontentment in their circumstances? And would you know, there are. There are. And it started, guess where it started? Adam and Eve, in the garden. It didn't take very long. You know, as soon as Satan tempted Eve in the garden, she thought she was missing out on something. She grew discontent. Oh, you mean there's something else I haven't eaten yet? Something, some new experience? And so she wasn't satisfied until she partook of that fruit. She wasn't satisfied with the perfect garden, the perfect husband, the perfect life, her perfect relationship with God. She wanted more. And you just think, Eve had it all. Eve had it all, and if she wasn't satisfied, what hope is there for me? But really, it reveals a heart problem, doesn't it? If Eve had it all, she was perfect. She'd just been created. They hadn't even sinned yet. Her husband was the perfect guy, and yet she was discontented. She lusted for something better, something more, new and improved. If we move on from Eve, we see not too much later, we have Abraham and Sarah. Sarah was impatient with God's timing. She wanted to have children, and she wasn't able to have children, and God had made a promise to Abraham saying that he would make of Abraham a great and mighty nation, and he had assured Abraham that Sarah was going to be the mother of that nation, and that she would have a child. And so when he promised that, he figured, she figured, well, it's going to happen soon. Well, that promise wasn't fulfilled until much later. And she wanted to be able to, you know, she just figured, well, God made this promise. He said, I'm going to be able to have children. And though we haven't had any yet, it's going to happen. And so she figured that God would answer that promise when she was able to have children, like the normal time for women to have children. And yet God had her wait to the time when it was no longer even possible for her to have children, when it was beyond hope for herself or for Abraham. But what happened while she was waiting is that she grew discontented with God's timing. Because God had said he was going to do it, she's waiting, waiting, waiting. And so she decided, well, God's not acting. I better. And of course, that's when she gave Hagar to Abraham and convinced Abraham that that was a good idea. And how she did that, I don't know. But and of course, that whole situation turned into a huge mess that Israel is still suffering from today. And her discontentment made her impatient with God's timing. Jacob's wife, Rachel, also suffered from barrenness like Sarah did. And Rachel expected Jacob to bear Jacob children, but God had other plans for her too. And Rachel's discontentment with her life situation made her frantic and desperate. In Genesis 31, it says, "Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she became jealous of her sister and said to Jacob, 'Give me children or I'm going to die.'" And she began to just blame Jacob for her barrenness. It was his fault that she couldn't have children. And she considered that her happiness was conditional on being able to produce children. All her happiness, everything was based upon that. And so she considered that her happiness would be found in a change situation. That something, if only it was different, I could be happy. That's what she thought. And if ever there was a woman who had unmet expectations, it was Job's wife. Job and his wife had it all. The house, the servants, grown children still living nearby, a place in society, financial stability, their health. And then suddenly it's gone. All of it. It's all gone. And as she surveyed the growing pile of her life, her wreckage, the wreckage of her life, she bitterly declared to her suffering husband, "Curse God and die." Her discontentment turned to bitterness over her circumstances. It was different than she thought it was going to be, and she just said, "Curse God. Might as well die, because it's not what I thought it was going to be." Haman in the book of Esther is another great example of discontentment. In Esther chapter 5, we learn that the king had given Haman power and prestige in the king's court, but even that wasn't enough. He was one of the top dogs in the kingdom, but even that wasn't enough. And in Esther 5, verse 13, it says, "Yet all of this does not satisfy me every time I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate." And the reason why is because Mordecai didn't bow to Haman. And so even though Haman had all the prestige and the power of all the kingdom, there was still one person who hadn't given him the respect he thought he deserved. And it wasn't enough for him. And it began to gnaw away at his heart. Because what he had already wasn't enough. He was discontented. It was discontentment which led the Israelites to complain that God's provision of daily manna wasn't enough for them. In Numbers 11:1, it says, "Now the people became like those who complain of adversity in the hearing of the Lord. And when the Lord heard it, his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some of them of the outskirts in the camp." And so verse 4, if we read on further, it says, "The rabble who were among them had greedy desires, and also the sons of Israel wept again and said, 'Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish that we used to eat free in Egypt, and the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic." Food network. "But now our appetite is gone. There's nothing at all to look at or eat except this manna, which comes down from heaven every single day, miraculously, enough for us to eat and feed our families every single day for 40 years, but there's nothing for us to eat." Isn't that how it is sometimes? They were discontented with God's provision, and it made them complain. It moved them to complain and grumble against the Lord, who was providing for them. It just wasn't quite what they had in mind. "We just want variety, Lord. We just want more. It's not what I thought it was going to be." Obviously, King David was discontent about something when he committed adultery with Bathsheba. He wasn't content to go to battle in the springtime, like kings usually did, and so he stayed around in Jerusalem. And while he did this, he was hanging out in the palace, kind of just bored because he's not doing what he's supposed to be doing. And then when he sees Bathsheba, and he begins to lust after her, he sees her bathing, and he begins to lust after her. And so instead of turning away and confessing his sin, then and actually being comforted and going to one of his wives, he had seven, he could have turned to one of those women. He doesn't. He goes and grabs her, and he sought out Bathsheba and led her into sin as well. And whatever was going on with David's heart at that time, he didn't find it. He wasn't doing what he's supposed to be doing, which was to go out to battle like all the kings did in the springtime. He stays at home. Then instead of finding comfort with his wives that he already had, he looks for another man's wife, and he gets into sin. And it was this lack of contentment, this whatever it was that was plaguing his heart, that caused a long-lasting chain of events in his life where he dealt with the issues of that sin forever. It was such a big deal, and it affected his nation. Discontentment is a common problem, obviously. It's a human problem, and it's one that we all struggle with at one time or another. You might not be today, and that is such a good thing, but you might tomorrow, or maybe you did yesterday. So we all are struggling at different times with discontentment about things, but it's how we deal with it and how we get over it that's going to make a difference. Proverbs 27:20 provides insight into our hearts. It says, "Sheol and Abaddon are never satisfied, nor are the eyes of man ever satisfied." So that gives us insight into our heart that we do have a problem here, that there's something going on with our hearts and our sinfulness that causes us to crave what we don't have. The grass is always greener on the next hill, over the fence, down the road, anywhere but where we're living right now. And the Apostle John understood this about human nature when he said in 1 John 2:15-17, "Do not love the world, nor the things of the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world. The world is passing away and also its lust, but the one who does the will of God lives forever." So it's those things are in our heart. Discontentment is manifested as lusting after the things of the world, the things our eyes see, the things our hearts desires, and it becomes an idol in our lives. And John says that kind of desire is not from God, but of the world. And this is the kind of discontentment that causes us to take our eyes off Christ and looks to the world for satisfaction. We actually take our eyes off of the one who can provide our heart satisfaction, and we look to the world that's passing away. When we struggle with discontentment in some area, most likely it means that we are not finding our contentment in Christ. I know it's true for me. When I'm struggling with discontentment over something, it's because I've taken my eyes off the Lord, and all of a sudden I'm looking to Jack to satisfy that for me, or I'm looking to my situation, or I'm looking to this new variety of food, or whatever it is that we're looking for that will cause us to take our eyes off Christ, and we actually grow discontented. And the focus shifts to this if only kind of mentality. If only I had more money, if only I were pretty, if only I were short, if only I were tall, if only I were thin, if only I were married, if only I was single, if only I had children, if only I had many children, if only I had healthy children, if only I had a job, if only I didn't have a job, if only I had that spiritual gift, her spiritual gift instead of whatever mine is, if only she was my friend. If only I had that house, if only I had a house, if only I could buy whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. I mean, the list goes on and on. If only, if only, if only. And it changes, doesn't it? It changes every day. There's things that we struggle with that are our if-onlys. I have my list. You probably have your own. But they tempt us to find our satisfaction in things other than the Lord. And it can become, if we are not aware of it, it can become the constant refrain of our hearts and of our lives, so that it becomes, if only, if only, if only. And it can produce discontentment. And that discontentment can produce some interesting fruit in our lives, and that's where we're at point number two now, recognizing the fruit of unmet expectations. So we've looked at the root, what's going on in our hearts, which is most likely discontentment. We don't like what's happening. And now let's look at, how does it show up then? If we allow discontentment to stay, what's it going to start boiling up looking like in our lives? And sometimes, you know, I think for me, it takes recognizing the fruit before I'm even aware of the problem at the root. When I see something in my life and I think, why am I so grumpy? I'm grumpy today. Why am I so grumpy? And I see the fruit, there's grumpiness, but it takes me a while to figure out, trace it back to the root. Well, what's going on? What's in my heart here that's coming out as grumpy behavior? And so we have to, sometimes the fruit is a good way to identify that there's a problem at the root, right? But we have to be able to recognize, oh, this is a bad fruit. I shouldn't be doing this or whatever. Because the fruit is just a symptom of what's really going on in our hearts. And so, you know, we may not often be aware of what's going on in our heart until it does show up that way. So like I mentioned, like when our daughter Leah got sick, which is what we call it, because, you know, what do you call a headache that lasts for 4 years? So she's, you know, when she got sick, I had realized that I expected God to allow our kids to grow up without physical affliction. And, or if he did, you know, afflict them, that it would be minimal, you know, something that they'd get over. Oh, he broke your heart, I'm so sorry. And then she'd be on to the next thing. It wasn't going to be a long-term, ongoing kinds of thing. And up to that point, I think I mentioned that, you know, our kids had been healthy. There wasn't anything in our life that led me to think that it was going to change. And then literally, in 1 week, her life changed. Our life changed. Where she came home from school, I've got a headache, take some aspirin. Next day she came home, I've got a headache again, take some aspirin. Next day, I've got a headache again, take some aspirin. Kind of thinking that's a little weird. And by the fourth day, the headache never went away. Everything is, she's healthy. There's nothing wrong with her that they have been able to find yet. We're still, you know, working on that. And yet we know that God, who is sovereign over bodies and over everything, has allowed it. He's allowed it and he's using it for good. But when I was coming to terms with that, that all my daughter's life was radically changing. She couldn't go to school any longer. She couldn't make it through her classes. We actually had to pull her out of school, and she did a private tutoring kind of thing. I struggled. I struggled with discontentment. I didn't like this turn of events that God had brought into our lives. I wanted him to fix it. I didn't want her to be sick anymore. And what parent does? We don't want our kids to be sick. But I really struggled with accepting those circumstances from the Lord of being able to thank him for everything. We're told to be thankful in all things, and I couldn't. I struggled with it. And I realized that I was struggling with that God had done something different than I thought he was going to do. And I had to overcome that. And as I was working through that, that's when I began to see that there was fruit in my life. That despair, that discouragement that was showing up as fruit was really the discontentment of my heart over my circumstances. And maybe you have something like that going on. I don't know. I don't know what's in your life. I don't know, you know, what things the Lord has been working on in you. But maybe there's some fruit showing up in your life that you just, if you were to take it back, it probably is, you could trace it maybe to some discontentment over the circumstances that God has allowed in your life. And so when we see those fruit, that they're symptoms of what's going on in our heart. So let's talk about how that discontentment might show itself. So I came up with a list of 12 fruit that I'm familiar with. You might be able to add some more, but I'll tell you mine, and you can see if those are similar ones that maybe you've seen in maybe other people's lives. Maybe not yours, but other people's. Will be gracious, huh? But what we need to do is, let's look at the fruit and see, you know, Lord, are some of these things true of me? So as I go through the list, maybe just think, you know, do I exhibit this at times? Is this a fruit that might be true in my life? And have I seen it there regarding this situation or this circumstance or these thoughts about this thing? And if so, then that means that it's got a root, doesn't it? It's got a root in your heart about something. And so our goal is to take a look at the fruit and look and say, yep, that one's mine. And then if we can name it and claim it, then we can kill it. All right, so that's the goal, is, it's like finding the mouse with a mouse trap. You know it's there, but you've got to find it before it's going to be gone, and dealing with it. All right, number one, the first fruit. First, remember that discontentment literally means bitterness of soul. So discontentment can show up as bitterness. It's the first fruit. Bitterness is described as resentment, great envy. It's sharp. Utter despair is painful. Bitterness is, you know what it tastes like, but you also, I think you, probably anybody who's alive knows what bitterness feels like. Remember the story of the two women who came to King Solomon, and they were arguing. They had one baby. There was two women, one baby, and they both were saying, that baby's mine. And they were arguing. It was a very bitter dispute, and one mother said, well, no, your baby died and you took my child. And the other one said, no, that baby's mine and your baby died and you took mine, and that kind of situation. And so what did Solomon do in order to determine the real mother, which is amazing? I never would have thought of this. He said, let's cut the child in half and then each woman will get half. Well, the mother whose baby had died and she stole the baby, she said, fine. Go ahead. That sounds like a good plan. But the mother whose child, the mother of that child, she said, no, spare that child's life. Give her my child. And then King Solomon gave the baby to that woman, because it's only a woman who is bitter of soul who would say, sure, kill her baby too. She was so bitter, she wanted that other woman's child to die. She took what wasn't hers after her child was died. And then if that didn't work, then she said, sure, kill that baby. That's bitterness, isn't it? That's bitter. That would be like that. That's sharp and it's ugly. So bitterness is not a good fruit. We want to deal with that one. So if you see that in your life, then you want to kind of take note. The second fruit, discontentment can show up as anger, impatience, irritability, grumpiness. We can be angry with God or others over a situation. You didn't meet my needs. God didn't do what I wanted. We get angry about situations. We're impatient. I expected to be gone. And where are you guys? Come on, let's go. We're being impatient about things or whatever it is. You're not meeting my needs. Let's go. Or whatever it is, that grumpiness that might come up along. Number three, we can become depressed when things turn out differently than we expected. I might as well just curl up into a ball. It's not worth getting up. We all manifest depression in different ways, but that depression over things. Number four, similar to depression, is just sorrow, kind of discouragement, moping. Being bummed out. I think of that as just being not quite so severe. Depression would be a really severe version of the fruit, but similar to that is just that kind of, kind of mopey little thing. Sometimes it's the thing that you do when someone doesn't meet your needs and you're kind of pouting a little so that they'll know that they didn't meet your needs. And so then they'll get on the bandwagon and take care of it, so that they will meet your needs. And then if they don't, then you can mope some more so that they really get the point, All right, number five, disunity or conflict. Ooh, can you even result from unmet expectations? Someone maybe doesn't meet our expectations, and we get in a huff, and we talk with them about it or don't, or they don't respond the way that we think they should. They did something to us or whatever. You get mad at someone for something that God is not doing. Maybe you blame someone else, but there's disunity or conflict in your relationships with other people. That's a fruit of discontentment. Number six, when we're discontented, we can resort to a grown-up form of pouting. You know, we've seen it in our kids, you know, with the lip. And a lot of times women, we don't put our lips out. We never would do that. But we might, you know, huff a little bit. Or, you know, our favorite one that we get teased about a lot in our household is, how is everything? Fine. You know, that one, that pouting one. Like, you know, is everything okay? It's fine. You know, that one. So, you know, we're disappointed about something. We pout. Number seven, jealousy is one of the fruits of discontentment. We're jealous or envious of the blessings of others. We want what they have. We believe we deserve what they have. Number eight, another fruit of discontentment shows up as not trusting God or not trusting other people. It's that complete lack of just willingness to trust anyone. And you might not be this way, but you may have encountered other people where you just see that there's that prickly shell. They will not trust you to even enter into their lives. It's where you hurt me, and I am not going to trust you. I will not, for whatever reason. And sometimes that happens in our relationships with one another, where maybe there was someone who they hurt you, and you will not reconcile with them. In your heart, there's that unwillingness to go back to that place again because of the pain of that relationship. That's a lack of trust. Number nine, covetousness is a result of discontentment. I don't have something that I want, but I want yours. I want that. I want what they have. I'm coveting that. I desire that. And number 10, hypocrisy, that pretends that everything is fine, but inside we know it's not. You know, that's discontentment at times. We just need to be able to identify things and be able to look and say, you know what, this is what it is, instead of hiding it. 11, fear. We grow fearful when things don't turn out the way we thought they would. So we get into controlling mode. You know, you can never be too safe. Let's buckle up, or let's make sure, or you wash your hands, or, you know, all those kinds of things. And we live in this huge safety conscious world right now. I don't know if it's how bad it is. Where we live in LA, it is so strange. There's so much safety stuff. It's just beyond belief. I don't know how moms even get out the door, because you've got to have this, and you have to have this, and you have to have this, and all these different little things, because there's diseases out there, or there's somebody could do this, and we get fearful because we aren't in control. We're not in control of our situations. And then my last one that I came up with, along with fear can come anxiety. What else might happen? I don't know if I can trust them. Oh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? You know, that kind of thing. What else is God going to bring my way? We get anxious when we're not in control of our situations. Now, I'm sure there's probably more things, and these are just my 12. And, you know, if you want to add some of your own, you could do that right now. But the point is just to be able to identify some of the fruit that shows up in our lives, which really comes from our hearts. You know, there's something wrong inside, and then it's boiling up in our lives, and it comes out in our relationships with one another. It comes out in our relationship with the Lord. It comes out and affects us so that we're not growing properly. So, I think it's really, this is one thing that we need to take a look at, and because our lives are busy, we often don't. We just pass it off like, oh, I was just being grumpy. It's no big deal. But why? Why were you being grumpy about that? And we don't take the time, because often we don't really want to deal with that. I don't want to deal with that. It's going to be painful. I'd rather just, you know, ask you to forgive me, which is good. But we don't want to deal with these things. And yet, if we don't begin to deal with the issues in our heart, and we continue to allow this fruit to be manifest in our lives, then it can strangle us. It can affect everything in our lives. And, of course, sin, one of the interesting things about sin is that the longer it's left in our lives, the longer we leave it undealt with, the bigger and uglier it gets. You know, it's like Well, I don't know what it's like. It's ugly. You know, one of those big old, like, mushroom things, you know, that just keep growing, and they're all twisted and gnarled and ugly, and you don't want to touch it. That's kind of what our sin does if we don't begin to deal with things in our lives. So I don't know about you, but, you know, about this time, as I go through all this stuff, I just think, well, I'm not going to have any more expectations then. I'll deal with it that way. I'm not going to have any more expectations then. I won't be discontent, and none of that fruit's going to be in my life. I just will go through life without expectations. And, you know, I think that's a reasonable expectation. The problem is, you know, we can't. It's just not how we're wired. God has made us to expect great things from him. But because we have sin in our lives, we also have the other end too, where because when sin or when expectations aren't met, then we struggle. You know, and I've feel like, you know, if I was more godly, then I wouldn't get bent out of shape about things. And I wouldn't be struggling with this. But the fact is I'm a sinner. I'm still a sinner. Even after I've walked with the Lord for 30 years, I'm still a sinner. And there's still all these things that are still bubbling up out of my heart. They're still there. And you know what? They're still going to be there. I'm still going to be fighting against that sin that's in my heart until I go to be with the Lord, or he comes back to take us with him. Because even though I am being changed, because every believer from the moment of salvation, you are no longer the same person. And the Lord, through the Holy Spirit residing in you, will begin to transform you and change you. It's a huge process. It takes a long time. And yet, that we are any different at all is so cool. It's wonderful. But it's a process, isn't it? It's not going to happen overnight. We're going to see the Lord continue to change us and bring us along. Now, I would love it if the Lord would just, the minute I was saved, he'd fix me, and then I was perfect here on earth. It'd be so great. But I'm not. And I still get discouraged about things. And, you know, I find that having unmet expectations keep me off balance. You know, I would rather just feel like I had it all together all the time. I don't know, is that how you would feel? But instead, you know, I don't have it all together. And I have to go to the Lord and ask him to help me. And that's exactly what the Lord is wanting to do. But that we don't have to give up, because the Lord is going to strengthen us. God is at work in our lives. And he uses unmet expectations and the sin that can boil up out of our hearts to change us, to transform us, to make us long for him, to make us long for heaven. So now we're at point three, how to overcome the disappointment of unmet expectations. So if the root of unmet expectations is discontentment, then the answer to overcoming it lies in contentment. Contentment means being satisfied. It means that it's sufficient. When you are content, you don't need other things or other people or other circumstances to make you happy. And as believers, we know why that is. Paul said in Philippians 1:21, "To me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain." And it is because that the Lord is our all. He's our all in all. He is sufficient. And with him to satisfy us, we don't need anything else. The psalmist said in Psalm 90, verse 14, "Oh, satisfy us in the morning with your loving kindness, that we may sing for joy and be glad all our days." And when we seek the Lord and look to him to be over our all in all, then we can be content. And so what we need to do, we need to ask him, "Lord, will you be my all in all? Will you satisfy my heart? My heart is not satisfied right now. Satisfy me with you. Because when you are my satisfaction, you help me to overcome my unmet expectations." Remember that list of if-onlys we talked about earlier? You know, if only I was tall, if only I was short, if only I had kids, if only I was married, if only I wasn't married. And, you know, all of those if-onlys that can come up and crop up in our lives. Well, the if-onlys are those things that we focus on with discontent, you know, which lead to discontentment rather than being in the Lord. But what's interesting is that I found a list of if-onlys that Paul wrote down in 2 Corinthians 12. And I want you to turn there, because up to this point, I haven't really had you open up your Bibles. And if you don't have a Bible, maybe you can snuggle up to somebody. Turn to 2 Corinthians 12, verse 7. And in this passage, in verse 7 of 2 Corinthians 12, we can actually read about Paul overcoming his list of if-onlys. He had some too. So if Paul had them, it's kind of cool because we get to watch him go through it. So verse 7, he says, "Because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, for this reason, to keep me from exalting myself, there was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from exalting myself." So what he's talking about there is Paul, he'd been taught by the Lord, he'd spent time with the Lord, and the Lord had taught him one-on-one as after, you know, the Lord was the risen Christ at this point, but he had come back to teach Paul. And Paul says that in order to keep him from exalting himself, from becoming too proud because he'd had a one-on-one tutorial with the Lord, then the Lord sent a messenger of Satan to torment him, a thorn in the flesh. So how does he feel about that? Verse 8, "Concerning this, I implored the Lord three times that it might leave me." What does that tell us? Paul didn't want the thorn in the flesh. This was his if only. If only I didn't have this thorn in the flesh. Lord, I don't like this thorn in the flesh. Lord, take this thorn in the flesh away from me. It's hard. And so he asked the Lord three times only. That's amazing to me. I, you know, I would have asked way more. But this is Paul's if only moment. If only, Lord, you would take this from me, then just think about what it would be like. I wouldn't be so hampered. But what did the Lord say back to Paul? Verse 9. "And he has said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness.'" This is God's answer for Paul. For Paul, when he says, "Lord, if only you would take this away. If only you would change my circumstances. If only it was different." And the Lord's answer, "My grace is sufficient for you." And then go on, look at what else he says. "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness." And then Paul says, "Most gladly, therefore, Lord, I will rather boast about my weaknesses, that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am well content with weaknesses, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, with difficulties for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong." Not only was Paul content with his circumstances, when he realized that God told him, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness," then Paul said, "Well, then I'm going to be so content. I'm content with everything that is difficult in my life, because I want your grace to be sufficient for you. I want your power to be perfected in my weakness. And so, Lord, bring it on. Bring on the weakness." I think that's pretty brave of him, don't you? There haven't been very many times when I've prayed, "Lord, bring on the weakness." And yet that's what Paul did, because he understood, "My grace is sufficient for you, and my power is perfected in your weakness." And so when we have these areas of weakness, these areas of trials and struggle, we need to remember what Paul learned here, that God's grace is sufficient for us. The power of Christ is enough to sustain us, to encourage us, and to help us overcome our situations that we face in life when we have unmet expectations. When God doesn't respond like we think he will, we need to find our comfort in the Lord. And turn to Philippians 4:10 next, because we're going to take a look. Paul also, another time, needed to remember God's grace was sufficient. And he provides us another example of choosing to find satisfaction in God rather than his if-onlys in Philippians 4:10. And in this situation, Paul is talking to the Philippians, and he says in verse 10, "But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last you have revived your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned before, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity in any and every circumstance. I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me." And what we know is, you know, Paul's circumstances at times were very needy. He oftentimes didn't have any food or comforts or extra clothing or anything. But rather than focusing on his circumstances, he focused on Christ and he found contentment. And he said, "I have learned to be content." And I love that, because when I think about, you know, being able to respond in that way, it's encouraging to me to know that I can learn to be content. It's not something I'm born with. We're not born with that. But we can learn it through the scriptures by going to the Lord, by relying on him, by finding his grace to be sufficient in our lives. All right, the last verse that I wanted to show you is in Hebrews 13:5. And here, the writer of Hebrews reveals the antidote to discontentment. In Hebrews 13:5, he says, "Make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. And why? For he himself, the Lord Jesus Christ himself, has said, 'I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you.' So that we confidently say, 'The Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What will man do to me?'" That's an encouraging thing, to be content with what we have, to be content with in our situations, to be content over whatever it is that God is doing in our lives that's different than we thought it was going to be content. And how can we be content? Because the Lord said, "I will never desert you. I will not forsake you. The Lord is my helper. I don't have to be afraid." You don't have to be afraid anymore of the circumstances of what might be coming around the corner. The Lord will help you. We can find true contentment in our lives if we remember that the Lord will not forsake us and he will help us. So let me close us in prayer. Father, thank you for this time. And Lord, we're just starting to take a look at this area of unmet expectations. And Father, I ask that you would continue to just work in our hearts, Lord, that you would continue to change us. I thank you for the promises in your word. We thank you that we have Paul's example of his if-onlys. Lord, help us to identify the fruit in our lives that reveal a root of discontentment. Father, help us to be willing to come to you. Lord, change us and help us to give you honor and glory in all things. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, at the back of your little notebook is a, I think, I can't remember what it's called, like worksheet or workshop page, something like that. And what I would like you to do is fill out numbers 1 and 2 right now. I'm going to give you some time. Number 1 says, "I have unmet expectations in the following areas." So if you could just look at your life and think, you know, I only have one, and this is it. Now, you know, I like to write down, you know, I have 10, 15, 20. But if you only have one, that is great. But don't look at anybody else's paper. This is hers, and that is yours, and no peeking. But just write down, number 1, "I have unmet expectations in the following areas." And then after you're done with that, go to number 2. "My response to these unmet expectations has been..." What has your response been to that? You know, are you seeing any fruit, bad fruit in your life? And then I'll stop you in a minute.